Okay, my share is going to be a little bit, no, I wouldn't say less deep, but less deep than Rav Daniel's share. Halacha obviously is very important, but it's the halachas. We're just going to spend a few minutes reviewing briefly some of the halachas having to do with the Suda of Purim. A little bit about what Rav Daniel mentioned in terms of the drinking, not so much, but definitely a different style of focus than a deep analysis of the Megillah. The Suda of Purim is actually one of the areas where we know that there is a mitzvah of Suda and Purim, but yet most of the halachas that have to do with Purim, the details are actually not found in the rules of the Suda. Most of the details of Purim have to do with the rules of Megillah, the rules of Mishloach Manot, a little bit Matanot Levyonim. The Suda, except for the drinking part, which is discussed ad infinitum, but most of the halachas of the Suda are not really discussed that much. There's not many many halachas in the first place, which is why it's good to do for a 10-15 minute shiur. But to just give a couple points that you may or may not be familiar with, some of them will probably be review that and some of them will be interesting points that you may not be familiar with. It starts with the time of the Suda. When is the Suda on Purim supposed to be? So the first thing that's just be aware, again, may realize, so the poskim say, the Ramah says, based on earlier sources, that already at night, there's no mitzvah of actually having a Suda at night, the night of Purim, but there is some sort of mitzvah of having, Yarbek Tzas B'Suda. You should have a little bit of a Suda, which is especially true this year, by the way, because normally you have Tanis Esther, and you read the Megillah, and you're not really supposed to eat until after the Megillah. And then after that, so of course you're going to break your fast after Tanis Esther. You're starving. So of course, you're going to have some sort of meal on Purim. But yet this year, and also in Yerushalayim, really every year, where Purim is the day after Tanis Esther, meaning 2 days after Tanis Esther. So so this year it's really not an obvious thing that you would have to eat other than the mitzvah of Malava Malka. But yet there's still an idea, despite that the night of Purim is also important, and therefore it's important to have some sort of food the night of Purim, some sort of Yarbek Tzas B'Suda, have a little bit of extra something. What is it?
After the Megillah.
Yeah, correct. After the Megillah. There's an issur of eating food before the Megillah, which, again, during a regular year is obvious, but this year and also in Yerushalayim is not quite as obvious, but there's an issur of achila before the Megillah. We'll go to that maybe at the end. If we have an extra minute or two, we'll discuss briefly just this year on Motzei Shabbos. But that's the first point. The night of Purim has a little bit of mitzvah of Suda. There are some that extend that Yarbek Tzas B'Suda to include a little bit of drinking. I personally am not one of those people. I'm not in favor of that at all. My personal opinion, which we'll see in the sources just in a minute or two briefly, is that the main mitzvah of drinking is really during the Suda and not other times. But there are some out there that like to drink also on the night of Purim. So we can just, I'm personally not supportive. And even if you are going to drink a little bit, I don't think there's mitzvah to get drunk at night, but you'll see that as something which is done in some places. That, by the way, was always nice about the YU in YU, the Chagiga. The night of Purim in YU was great because it was the only Chagiga that I've ever seen that nobody drinks. And it was amazing. It was actually really inspirational. Everybody was really into it without all the influence of the alcohol to go with it, which you'll find in many, many other places. So that's point number one. Point number two, what is the story with the day of Purim? So here, the Ramah also, Ramah mentions, the minhag, and this is not halacha, but the minhag is that the Suda is usually eaten in the afternoon. This, by the way, is all mentioned in Siman Tafresh Tzadi Hei, in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and Or HaChaim. So he says the minhag is that we eat the Suda in the afternoon. Everybody knows we try to daven mincha first if you can. And then afterwards you have the Suda, and the majority of the Suda should be in the daytime. This is also a point which I think is pretty well known. But in the Chutz Laretz, maybe not always practiced. But the standard custom is to make sure that most of your meal is during the daytime and not at nighttime. There are some that start the meal late in the day, shortly before Shkia, and most of their meal is at nighttime. That does not seem to be recommended by most of the poskim, though there are some I found in the Piskei Tshuvos. He quotes a few sources that defend that custom, but in general, the accepted and recommended custom is to eat most of your meal during the daytime, after mincha, according to this. They quote here also, in the name of, I think, some of the Kabbalistic sources, that there also may be an idea to have a Suda in the morning, believe it or not. Even though the standard accepted custom is to have the Suda in the afternoon, so there are some. So he quotes here. Right. It's in the name of the Shalah and a few others, that the Kafachayim, that there's some sort of idea of having a Suda in the morning also. So according to those that fulfill, that follow that, So some of them might actually have their main suda in the morning, and that's not what we usually practice, but the Piskechua suggests, and I'm not sure this is necessarily something that we should do, but he says that somebody who wants to really, you know, somebody who has the capability and who wants to really be, you know, yotze the day called deos and be machmir on suda and purim, should have a little bit of a suda in the morning also. Again, for most of us, I don't know if that's the best thing that we should do. I think that we need the time to do the other mitzvahs of the day, matas lavionim, mishloach manos, and make sure that we have a proper suda in the afternoon. But again, just so you are aware, there is this idea out there that some have, that having, you know, there's an idea of having a suda in the morning. Now, in terms of the main part of the suda. So what are the aspects of the main part of the suda? So the first question is, do you have to eat bread? And this is already an interesting one. You might think the answer is obviously yes, but the truth is it's not actually so simple. Without getting into all the sources here, there actually are some makoros about this question. But cut to the chase, the later poskim. Basically, the Magen Avraham claims that there's no mitzvah of eating bread on Purim. He says that the main mitzvah of eating a suda on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there the mitzvah is to have bread. But he says Purim, the idea of the Purim suda is fun. I mean, he doesn't quite spell this out, but the idea would seem to me that it's...
They have wine.
Okay, well, we're getting there. It's fundamentally different. It's really more about, you know, it's about the simcha in the sense of celebrating the miracle, you know, everything that's going on in the Megillah, which is a little more where Daniel discussed. Again, he doesn't quite say that inside, but that might be, you know, a little bit of what he's getting at. And therefore, he says that matzil mefter nafshi mine matamim. As long as you have good foods at your suda, that's fine. There are others that disagree, including Rav Yaakov Emden and others, who want to say that anytime you talk about a suda means bread. So by definition, if you're talking about a suda, there has to be bread. So this is not, you know, paskened 100% in the halacha. It's not clear. I think the accepted practice and the recommended practice is probably that one should try to have bread at the Purim suda, but it's definitely not an absolute. If you don't want to have bread, or you don't feel it, or you don't enjoy bread, or whatever, so it's not, you don't have to. It's not the worst thing in the world. One other interesting aspect, which is related to this, which I'll just mention now, is in terms of benching. Right? Do you have to? We know that you have to say Al Hanisim in benching. There's a general rule that when it comes to, let's say, Ritzei on Shabbos or Yalav Yavo on Yom Tov and other days, that if you forget to say it, you have to go back. And the rule usually is that if the meal, if having the bread is an obligation, is a chiv, then if you forgot Yalav Yavo or Ritzei or whatever, you have to go back. That's the rule on Shabbos, for at least the first two meals on Shabbos. If you forget Ritzei, you got to go back. Why? Because you have a mitzvah, a chiv, to eat bread. Same thing for Yom Tov, for Yalav Yavo. If you forget Yalav Yavo on Rosh Chodesh, you don't have to go back. Why is that? Because having bread on Rosh Chodesh is not a mitzvah. It's a nice idea. It's a good thing to have a little bit of extra meal, but it's not a chiyuv. It's not an obligation. So here, interestingly enough, again, maybe related, maybe not, but interestingly enough, there's a machlokas in the Achronim that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, if you forgot Al HaNisim on Purim, do you have to go back or not? So the bottom line is Savik Brachos Lahakel, which, again, you know, you can decide whether how that impacts on the question of the bread, but it's interesting. There definitely, you know, might be a connection here, but that's the bottom line in terms of the Al HaNisim. And again, it shows you that there's not a definite obligation to have bread on Purim.
So he's saying you don't have to go back.
So he says bottom line is because of Sadek Brachos L'Hakel not to go back and say Al HaNisim. Again, all I'm saying is it shows you that there's obviously a question. It's not clear that you have to have bread on Purim, but again, that's a machlokas as well. Second point related to that, do you have to have basar, not yain, but basar, do you have to have meat at your Purim suda? So here also, the Magen Avraham is misupak. He's not sure whether you have to have meat during the Purim suda. This also may be related, again, we're not going to go into this in detail now, but there's a big discussion on Yom Tov. Is there a mitzvah of achilat basar on Yom Tov or not? That's also a machlokas, and it could be that it's related to this as well. Some say that on Yom Tov there's no chiyuv of achilat basar because it's only... The mitzvah of Simcha and Achilat Basar was only at the base of Migdash with eating korbanos, and not today. And others say, no, even today, even without the korbanos, the meat of the korbanos, there's still a mitzvah of Basar. So here also could be that it's related to this question the Magen Avraham discusses and other Rishonim discuss. But here there seems to be more grounds and more arguments to say that you really should. So the bottom line is, again, it's not clear psak, but it seems to be recommended that if you're able to and you enjoy basar, which in this case actually might even mean real meat rather than chicken, though chicken might also work, but even better would seem to be meat. There's more reason to say that you should eat meat at your Purim suda if you're able to. But again, it depends on, you know, your likes. If you like fish and you don't like meat, or somebody, one of my students said, and why was telling me she was at somebody's house on Shabbos and they were vegans, and she couldn't stand it. She was so upset. She said, "How, I can't handle this." You know? So whatever, you have to decide what's good for you. But you know, there is an idea that basar is good, but maybe not absolute, according to some of the poskim. That's the story with the Suda. In terms of, yeah.
Is that generally for all Suda, or you're just saying specifically
for Purim? Specifically for Purim. Meaning on Shabbos, sorry, just the contrast. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's more of an idea of eating basar. But what I was saying is there also, it's not so clear. Meaning for Yom Tov also, Shabbos, there is just an idea you're supposed to have good food on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. On Yom Tov, there's a special mitzvah of Simcha. And the mitzvah of Simcha is a question whether that includes meat or not. In the time of the Beis Midrash, it certainly did, because you ate the meat of the Korbanos. Mm-hmm. And the machlokas today is whether that mitzvah of Simcha applies with basar today, even without korbanos. Some say yes, some say no. And again, it could be that it's the same machlokas here also. The same point that we're not sure about in terms of Purim. It could be not. It could be Purim is different. Again, because Purim is a slightly different focus. Even though, yes, it's about simcha, but it's about a simcha commemorating something a little bit different. So again, it could be if meat is good for you, if you enjoy it, maybe yes, maybe not. Again, I'm not giving a definitive psak here, because the achronim don't give a definitive psak, but I'm just mentioning that it's an issue. The other issue, which is also not given a definitive psak, as we well know, is the question of drinking during the Suda. So the Rambam and many of the others, again, assume that the mitzvah of drinking is really connected to the Suda. But what that mitzvah of drinking is obviously very, very unclear. From the Gemara, it seems like the mitzvah is to go all out, and yet, you know, all the poskim are struggling, as Rav Daniel mentioned, and he's mentioned it in past years also, they're struggling with how do you deal with that, not just from a philosophical perspective, from a law perspective, but also from a halachic perspective. You know, to tell somebody to go get drunk and get stoned in a way which he's going to be dalzel mitzvos and start throwing up on his table and, you know, and not being able to bench properly, whatever, that's not
killing
really...
Killing his guests.
Yeah, yeah, killing his guests, exactly, and maybe resuscitating him afterwards. you know, but that's not necessarily what the halacha had in mind. So that remains a machlokas to this day in terms of what to do on Purim. Every shita is legitimate, but the thing is, if you're going to get drunk on Purim, try to do so in a way which is mechubad rather than a way which is mezalzil. And that requires a lot of hachana. Okay, if you the Sfarim talk about hachana for Purim, a lot of that is, you know, hachana that you should get yourself to a spiritual level that when you're drunk on Purim, what comes after me was nichnas yayin yotza sod. What's the sod? The sod should be tohor. The sod shouldn't be everything else in the back of your mind. That's really the ideal in terms of that.
I said you should get drunk on Purim, like on the actual
discussion. Oh, there you go, right. Get drunk on the concept of Purim. Very good. So that's, again, that's I think maybe part of the ideal. And the Maharal, who really he pushes the drinking, I think he would say something like that also. You're really supposed to get wasted so that everything, you know, everything comes out, but what comes out is supposed to be the yetzer sod as a positive thing. But again, you know, this also goes back a little bit to what Daniel discussed, a really fascinating discussion in terms of getting drunk. There's also a machlokus in the post about whether the mitzvah of getting drunk applies only to wine or also to other drinks. Again, maybe related to the Megillah as well, because part of the nace in the Megillah took place with yayin, with wine. And I would say, you know, maybe not. Maybe anything which gets you intoxicated, the point is to be intoxicated. And therefore more than that. The main thing, at least in my mind, is don't mix. All right, if you mix, then you're finished. Because that's really, it's not safe. It's very dangerous. I'm sure, you know, you could tell me this better than I could tell myself, because I don't drink so much. But again, it's important to keep in mind safety. I'm drinking it as part of the meal, after bread. Just keep it safe, both for yourself and for your children, for what they see. Very, very important. Okay, so that's all in terms of the Suda. I'll just end off with one or two points about this year having to do with Motzei Shabbos, which I think also took place last year and 3 or 4 years ago. We've had a string of years here that we've had Purim and Motzei Shabbos, so maybe you know these halachos already. Just in two minutes, here in Yabed Yamin, I think the practice in most of the shuls here is something which in Chutz Laaretz doesn't always work, but here works very well, which is that since there's an issur of Hachana on Shabbos, you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. So therefore, if you know, if you're on Shabbos, you're getting your things ready, you're getting your groggers, you're bringing your Megillah to Shul or whatever, and you're already there before Shabbos is over and Shul before Maariv, so that's, you know, that doesn't work so well in terms of Hachana. So basically, what most of the Shuls here do is say that after Suda Shlishi, you're at home, don't daven Maariv Miyad B'tzeda Kochavim, in terms of Miyad B'tzeda Shabbat. Say rather, wait at home, Maariv starts 10 to 15 minutes after Shabbos is over. So what you can do is basically say Baruch Hamad Ben Kodesh L'chol, right when Shabbos ends, whatever time that is, which I don't remember what time it is, 6:25 maybe, something like that. And then you can get yourself ready, get your costumes on, get your Megillah, get your, you know, whatever else you need to bring. And then you go to Shul and you daven Maariv 10 minutes later, so you don't have to risk violating the Issur of Hachana. That's, again, I assume this year also most of the Shuls are going to do that as well.
And when do you make Abdullah?
So that's the interesting question. That's what's not clear. Right? When do you make Abdullah? So we'll end with this point, because this is really the most interesting and also the most unclear point. The Achronim bring down the following point. They say that if you're in Shul already, this is again what's done in Chutz Laaretz, in Shul, you daven Maariv in Shul, let's say, and then they say in Shul to make Havdalah in Shul, again in Chutz Laaretz, when many people do make Havdalah in Shul, to make Havdalah in Shul after the Megillah reading. Why? Because we say there's an idea that you try to delay the end of Shabbos as much as possible. So read the Megillah first, and then make Havdalah afterwards. So the question is, it comes to our case, when we're at home before we daven Ma'ariv, and if you're at home for 10 to 15 minutes after Shabbos is over, before you daven Ma'ariv in Shul, is it better to make Havdalah first or after the Megillah like we did in Shul? So it's not really so clear. It seems like the following. And you can find different things about this. If you look in the Makoros, it's not so clearly discussed, but it seems like the more recommended practice is as follows. If you're not going to be doing any serious malacha at home before you go to shul, meaning no extended, hard, difficult, exertion type of malachas, then it seems like the preferred custom is to wait to say Havdalah until after the Megillah, like what some of the Acharonim say in terms of what to do in Shul. So essentially what that would mean, say Baruch HaMavdu B'Kodesh L'Chol, right after Shabbos is over, you can now do Malacha, but you're not doing anything crazy, you're just getting your stuff together and putting costume, whatever, and maybe make a phone call or two and walking to Shul. You hear the Megillah, you have Ma'ariv and Shul, you hear the Megillah, and then afterwards you go home and make Havdalah. However, those who want to do the other way, meaning if you're going to be doing some serious malacha beforehand, or for whatever reason it works out practically for you or technically better to make Havdalah first, it's perfectly fine. In terms of eating or drinking before the Megillah, so it's recommended not to use wine, because drinking wine before the Megillah actually is a problem. But assuming that you use grape juice, so grape juice is not what we call a meshaker, it's not intoxicating, and therefore you're not having a whole meal, it would be permissible, according to most opinions, to make Havdalah on grape juice before the Megillah reading. And that's doable. But again, I would say slight recommendation to make Havdalah after the Megillah reading, but whatever works better for you is probably fine. We had an interesting case last year, which I think we're going to have this year again as well. We had guests over for Shabbos from some of my students from Yerushalayim. So they came Dafka Parsha Zachar, and they weren't celebrating Purim. But the question is for them, they were girls. So the question is for them, girls generally, the rule is, L'chadchila, girls don't make Havdalah for themselves. That's a whole other shir, which we're not going to go into now, but that's the L'chadchila. So the question is, they were going to be gone by the time we got back from Megillah. So was it better for us to make Havdalah beforehand and have them in mind, and they can get their Havdalah and go back afterwards? Or is it better for us to make Havdalah after the Megillah reading and for them to make Havdalah themselves or whatever it was, or they couldn't wait around? What was better in that situation? So I don't actually remember what we did in the end. I'm not sure. But there's certainly room to say that you can make Havdalah beforehand and be motu them as well. That's certainly room to say that. At the same time, there's also plenty of room to say that a woman who's not going to hear Havdalah from a man, almost all the posts can say, bottom line is, she can make Havdalah for herself as well. There's a few opinions that say maybe she shouldn't, which is why we're generally machmir, but certainly if she needs to, that's also acceptable for her to make Havdalah herself. So again, I don't remember what we did in the end, but these are some of the issues to be aware of that come up on Purim. In terms of Purim and Motzei Shabbos, also one point that everybody always forgets but doesn't remember what to do, but in terms of the Kaddish, so the Kaddish after Shemot Esrei is Kaddish without Tiskabel, then you say Vehi Noam, and then you say, I don't even have this anymore, I think you say Kaddish with Tiskabel, then you read the Megillah, and then after the Megillah you go back and say V'atah Kadosh, which, okay, however it works out. But anyway, at the end of there, so there's another Kaddish. And the question is, what did you say? That last Kaddish, so some people get confused, but the halacha is that you don't have to say Tiskabel the second Kaddish. The second Kaddish, you only say Yehei Shalom Rabbah without Tiskabel, but if you said Tiskabel, that's also good. But that's something that comes up every year. Okay, we're going to finish up with this. Just last point, which I forgot to mention before, back to the Suda for a second. Those who are, somebody who's in Avil on Purim, not during Shiva. Shiva would certainly not be a question. But in terms of, let's say, Shloshim or Yudbeis Chodesh, so are you allowed to have your Purim Suda with other families, with other people? So this is a really interesting question. My wife was in the situation a couple years ago. Some of you also, people in your family have been in the situation. The answer is it's not clear. All right? It's really not clear what the story is, because generally during Shloshim and 12 months for a parent, you're not really supposed to have major gatherings of a lot of people together to celebrate. So certainly to go to an event where they're playing music and they're dancing and a lot of people there, that's generally, should not be done even on Purim. But the question is, if you have a Suda with your family and with other people, extended family, or with three other neighbors and their families, is that okay or not? So it's a bit of a machlok as what to do in that situation. There are a lot of posts in that hold that if you have a Suda every year with you know, your extended family, your extra, your brothers and your sisters or your cousins or whatever, or with a couple families, the same families every year, there are some that hold that you're allowed to do that in Purim as well. So there is room to be made on that point. Certainly, if otherwise people would look at you and say, why aren't they coming to the Suda? And people will say, oh, it's because they're in Avelus. There's a question that maybe that's not so ideal. The same way that on Shabbos, we generally do not have Avelus in public. So some say that here also maybe for Purim it's the same thing. And others say, no, it's really better to have you know, your Purim Suda by yourself. So the bottom line there is also, again, it's not clear. There's no bottom line psak, but those who don't want to have it with other families, some people just are not in the mood. They'd rather have it by themselves. That's for sure fine. Those who really would want to have it with other families, you know, assuming it's families that you have with every year, it's not something which is a one-time thing, but every year you have with two other families, whatever it is, so there's also room to be makil, just maybe not if there's live music, walk out during the music or during the dancing, whatever it is. Okay, shkach, everybody. Stop there.